I said, my daughter's so into Harry Potter at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of changing my name to Hagrid Coggins.
Is the joke just that Hagrid sounds a bit like Howard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not working for you?
This is the Living Spit Podcast. Welcome to the Living Spit Podcast. Listen to the Living Spit Podcast. It's on the way.
I've got one for you.
Go on.
A priest, a rabbit, and a minister walk into a bar. And the rabbit says, I think I might be a typo.
That is good, isn't it?
I like that.
That is good.
I've got a lot
good.
Of time for that. All right, well, let's...
Hello, and welcome to the Living Spit Podcast. What? Wow,
it's quite scary. What? Your eyes went to about three times the size on that hello.
I'm just doing my Graham Norton.
It was very good. Very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I feel suitably welcomed. I don't know about you, listeners.
Well, good. I barely got through the sentence, but I'm glad you feel welcomed.
I do.
So we're back. Fifth one. Can you believe
Episode
it?
Episode five. I cannot believe
Episode
it.
Episode five.
No, yeah. It's unbelievable.
It is. Yeah, definitely. And, well, we were just chatting just now before we went on air, as it were. Mm. Did you notice I actually did the air quotes
then? Yeah, I saw that.
Which is really sad. You got your tea there?
I got my tea. Yeah, you got a cup of tea with you?
I've finished mine.
Oh, you're joking.
I've already finished it.
You can't record a podcast without a full cup of Rosie Lee.
Well, I'm going to have to.
You're going to have to.
So we're on lockdown for coronavirus, in case you're listening to this years in advance. Years in the
future.
In the future. Or in the past. You know what I mean, anyway.
Yeah.
We're feeling a bit kind of jaded. It's been long enough now, isn't it?
It's been a long time. And at least another 3 weeks.
I know. Mm. We're kind of getting a bit bored now. But we've both been doing some stuff, so that might be available soon, mightn't it?
It might well be. Howard's got a secret project on the go that he's been working on in his spare room. And every time I ask a question about what he's up to, he gets very evasive. He says, well, you'll find out soon enough. So I don't want to build it up, listeners, but it looks like it's going to be something very special.
Really?
Oh, he's got a text. He's got a text.
It's Becky Hester.
What did she say?
Great. I don't know why she sent me that, but there we are. I've turned it off.
What was it? Is it a dick pic?
No, it wasn't. I've got my running order in front of me, Stuart, which you've lovingly prepared.
Thank you.
I did.
Well,
and you sent it to me with no kind of "Hi, mate, here it is," which is
the normal.
"Hi, how you doing? How's everything? Just here's the podcast thing." Nothing. Just a PDF.
Yeah.
On an email.
Well, I'm getting serious about this shit now. You know, here it is. Just here it is.
So number one is theme. We've done that.
We've done
that's
the theme
of the
We've
thing.
Done the
that's
theme.
The,
What's
that's
item
the,
number two?
Introductions and chat. Well, hi, I'm Howard Coggins.
And I'm Stu McLaughlin. And with our powers combined, we are
Living Spit. And then we can go straight on to number three now, which is welcome to podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So, each week we'll be giving you, the listener, an exclusive behind-the-scenes look at one of our 16 theatre shows.
16 shows, can you believe it?
Yep, that's it. Now, the next one is... let's do the next bit.
We always say this on this podcast, but we've had a great response to this podcast. It's been fantastic. Mm. People are apparently downloading it and listening.
Now, last week, if I remember, you'd looked at the stats and not as many people last week.
That's
true.
Are
we like, hopefully coronavirus will be, and have we reached our peak?
I think we've definitely reached the peak. Right. I think there was a novelty value with episode one.
Right, okay.
Let's just say we've now got a core audience of like...
diehards.
Diehard fans.
Brilliant.
Exactly. So if you're listening, count yourselves among the diehard fans of Living Spit. So thank you for joining us every week, listening to us wittering on.
Okay. So, just a shameless plug. If you feel like you are donating to our GoFundMe for this podcast, then that would be great. The details are underneath the list on the Podbean app, and will also be on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that shit.
Yes, so please give generously to that
shit.
But the next item on the list is questions and comments.
Right, so I've got one thing to say to you, Stuart.
Oh, go on.
You're an idiot.
I'm in trouble, aren't I? Yeah,
you are in trouble. Now, Stu edits this podcast because he's a whiz on the old computer music software. So we record this and then Stu goes off and just edits it and plays in the jingles. We don't play the jingles in live. I'm letting light in on magic here.
You really are.
But so Totoro
Totoro. Is it Japanese? Totoro.
It could be. It could
be. Anyway.
Says, a comment from last week, there's silence where the song should have been, crying emoji. So, yeah. Stu, now's your chance to...
Yeah, I owe the listeners an apology, don't I?
Off
you go. Listeners, all I can do is apologise, because last week I was supposed to play in the song O Little Town of Bethlehem during the Nativity episode, and I had the track muted for no good reason. So I was invoking the spirit of John Cage, and I just played 2 minutes of utter silence, and I posted it up and let it go out. And I had a few comments, one from Totoro, and one from our esteemed director. You'd have heard of him from him like a couple of weeks ago, Craig Edwards. He texted us and said,
I was just listening to the podcast, and there's 2 minutes of silence where the song should be.
So
I have to say, even I think that's gone a bit far.
yeah, that might have been a bit too far. But so, yeah, we found out there was 2 minutes of silence, and so I humbly... apologise for that,
and luckily we're in a position where we can fix that problem, aren't we, Stu?
We certainly can.
Because this is our podcast,
yeah.
So we can now just play the track that you missed last week.
Yes, we can. So for all you who missed it last week, here is the song from the Nativity, O Little Town of Bethlehem.
Little town of Bethlehem, it's Joseph's place of birth. His father was a civil engineer who looked like Colin Firth.
My mother worked in Wetherspoons, she fixed the slot machines. In that shitty town of Bethlehem, Judea's Milton Keynes. Oh, little town of Bethlehem, that's where we've set our course.
I'm riding on a donkey, we can't afford a horse. I would have liked a camel to smooth out all the bumps. I'd make a chair out of its pair of furry fatty humps.
Oh, little town of Bethlehem, towards you now we draw. My feet are sore and blistered,
my arse is rubbed red raw. My waters have just broken.
A B&B, we're in luck. They're sure to have a room. No vacancies. Oh, fuck.
Okay, there it is. A Little Town of Bethlehem.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant, that track. I love that track.
Lovely track.
Yeah. Yeah. I could listen to that all day.
Yeah. Well, now that I've put it into the podcast, you can.
Brilliant. Okay, so there's a little bit of a story behind this, wasn't there?
Yes, no, that's
so
right.
That song came at the point where... it was to do the journey, wasn't it? But that Mary and Joseph made from wherever they lived. Where was it?
Where was it? They lived.
Mary of Nazareth.
Nazareth. That's
Nazareth.
Right.
To Bethlehem, yeah. And we were all set to do Little Donkey, weren't we? Because we knew we wanted to have a donkey theme. She's riding on a donkey, that sort of thing. And then you pick up the story from here, Stu.
And Howard came over to my house and we were writing, and we said we wrote in the script. They sing Little Donkey, and then we said, well, hang on a sec, we better We better check, because that's not a carol, is it? That's a song. We should probably check with PRS whether we're allowed to use it. So Howard got on the phone, didn't you, to PRS?
I did. And it took ages. Do you remember? We're in the middle of writing day, and it took about 2 hours trying to find out whether we could use this song or not.
Yeah, they're trying to find who wrote it and which department to speak to. Eventually, you got through to a person who said, it's going to be about £1,000 per performance. And we went, do you know what? We'll think of something else. Thanks a lot. And we rang off. And then
we did.
Shit, we haven't got a song there. So we came up with "O Little Town of Bethlehem," which is a carol. So that was out of copyright, and we could use it freely.
So there we are. Yeah. A little bit of backstory.
Yeah.
Right, so back to the comments now. So our friend Graham Gale.
That's right. Now, last week you asked, does Graham listen to this podcast? And he's come in with a response to that, Howard. He says, of course we listen to your podcast. We, Marilyn and myself, apologise for the slight whiff of chlorine as we listen to your wonderful podcasts whilst in our hot tub. I'm also proud that my mentions now exceed Kerry Bartlett's.
Right. Well, ironically, he's put in a mention for Kerry Bartlett.
He has. He's tallied her mentions up again.
Now, and do you think, right, that Marilyn is Graham's wife, or he's having somebody he's having an affair with?
A hot tub affair.
A hot tub affair. Hmm. I mean, you'd think he was in, like, L.A. or something. We're in the hot tub. He lives in Dorset.
How the other half lives, eh, Howard?
Yes, exactly.
Hot tub. We're in the wrong game. We should be in the rural touring game.
Do you have a hot tub?
I don't, but I've got a bath. And I've got a sink with a plastic little tub in it.
Yeah, no, neither of them count. We've got a paddling pool, and what I do is I sit in it and fart.
Right, just constantly.
It's like a jacuzzi. Yeah.
What, you can just do one long fart that just keeps on?
Oh, yes.
You are quite talented in the old flatulent area, aren't you? So
I think I am.
Well, there we go.
I'm not going to lie.
Hello, Graham. Thanks for listening. And Marilyn, if you are, I hope you're Mrs. Gale, but you never know, do you? So just keep it on the lowdown. But thanks for listening, and enjoy your hot tub. We're very jealous.
Yes. Yeah. Next up, we've got Stu.
Who's that? Jane Hoban. Hoban?
Yeah, you see, I avoided saying the name.
You did. That's why you said Stu.
Yeah. I didn't know whether you might know how you pronounce it.
I'm guessing either Jane Hoban or Jane Hoban. Anyway, Jane says,
yes,
thank you for doing the podcasts. I love the wittering on and the jingles, helping us enjoy a rainy lockdown afternoon. Well, that's lovely, isn't it? That's lovely. Thank you, Jane. That means a lot. Thank you very much.
Sarah Louise Watts. We've had quite a big conversations with Sarah.
We have. Or is it Sarah? Because there's no H.
Sarah. Actually, that's true. Sorry, Sarah.
If we've been pronouncing your name wrong all this time, Sarah/Sarah, we apologise.
She says, loving these podcasts.
And two exclamation marks, Howard.
I know.
That's rare. Ian Heppenstall, what does he say?
I hope you're planning a coronavirus play already. If you do, I want 10%.
They always want their 10%, don't
they? They always want 10%.
Leeches.
Yeah. Ian, maybe, but you're not getting a penny.
No.
We'll
see you in court before we give you a penny of our money, Ian Heppenstall.
Yeah.
There you go. We told him.
Good.
The wonderful Dr. Philip Naylor has been on. Now, we've heard from him a couple of times.
I'm calling him Pip now.
You call him Pip, are you?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how he'll respond to that.
Don't care.
He is a qualified doctor. I mean, he's done his years of studying for that, and it's reduced to Pip.
Yeah, Pip.
Anyway, hi, Pip. He says, if Living Spit survive COVID-19, brilliant,
nice,
will you consider putting on a lavish passion play in celebration? I'd love to see your take on The Last Supper.
Well, do you know what? That has been mooted.
It has.
I have to say, it has been mooted.
We have talked about it.
It was potentially going to be next year, but we're not now. We're going to do Elizabeth again.
Yes.
But that is it's impossible.
Yeah, watch this space for spring 2022.
22, yeah.
Well, also, Dr. Philip, or Pip, as we're calling him, he doesn't stop there, Howard. He says, as an ex-physicist, I was impressed by your show Giants of Science. So some background on the making of that would be nice.
Great. Well,
Pip, it's your lucky day. Because this week, Howard, what are we
going to
do?
We're going to do Giants of Science.
Wow.
So let's remember how it all started with the birth of the mirth.
People ask us, where'd you get your ideas? Well, let us tell you. Lots of blood, sweat and tears, and I will tell you how we maintain these careers. For what it's worth, it's the birth of the mirth.
Okay, the birth of the mirth. Giants of science, our whistle-stop tour through the history of science. How did it all begin?
Okay, so it was a sort of difficult time, wasn't it? We were sort of trying to work out what we wanted to do. We'd done the rhyming shows. That was good. We'd done the history shows. We'd done three of those. We'd done some rhyming shows. And it was kind of, well, we need to do something that's different, but in the same sort of style.
Yeah.
And so we talked about, for a while, doing the history of an idea.
That's right.
Didn't we?
Yeah, I remember that. There was one about an idea about doing the space race. I remember that.
Yes, yes. But Toby Hulse had already done
that's
it.
That's right. It had been taken.
Yeah. And I remember where we were when we actually made the decision to do it.
Yeah.
And once again, it was one of those, yeah, let's do it there. It was in the summer. It was, well, sort of late summer, early autumn. We were doing a tour of Henry.
Right.
So about 3 years ago, probably.
Sounds about right.
And we were in the Steiner School in Hereford.
That's right, I remember.
And you said, you basically came up with, you said, right, I think we should just do one about science, and it should be called Scientrific.
That's right.
And that was it.
That's it.
And we went, yeah, all right.
And I remember that we, for some reason, I don't remember what, we had to travel to that gig separately.
Yes,
so
that's
you were
right.
in the van. Yep. With Trimo, I believe, and I followed on in my car. So I had lots of time. We'd been thinking about this for a little while of what to do, because I think you'd done one of those things that you do every sort of 6 months or something, where you go, listen, guys, I hate to be, but we got to start thinking about summer 2022. And we all go, oh, Howard, we all know we do, but it's good that you do, because otherwise we'd never get anything done. But you'd done one. I think you said, we need to start thinking about 2018, guys, because we're not going to have any work. So we were thinking about what to do, and I had all this time driving to Hereford, I remember, with no one to talk to. And the idea whirred around my head the whole way, and it grew and grew into something. So when I arrived, I remember saying, right, I've got this idea for the show. And I shared it with you all, and you were very excited about it. So it was going to be called Scientrific, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And
that was the original title.
Yeah, and it was, it was that until fairly late on, wasn't it?
It was.
It was actually, we'd had the artwork done and everything, I think.
Called
Scientrific.
Yep.
And we were doing it at the Bristol Old Vic, and we hadn't been there for ages because they'd been closed, and we had, you know, various reasons. They were reopening their studio, and they said to us, look, we really want you to be part of our opening season. What are you going to do? And we said, well, we're doing this show called Scientrific. And they said, yeah, do it. So we got all the artwork together and you know, wrote the script and all that kind of stuff. And then they kind of were a little bit kind of, oh, it's a bit, it looks a bit young, because it's a grown-up show, like most of our shows. And the artwork made it look sort of like a kids' show. So
And the name Scientrific implied that kind of like young feel. Plus, it was going to be on over the half-term holidays, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right.
And they were a bit worried that there'd be loads of families turning up, expecting a family show, and there's loads of Fs in it. A worry that was not entirely unfounded, it turns out, as the show played on. We'll come back to that later on.
Yes.
But either way, we thought we'd better change that name, because it seems a bit young. So we went, I can't remember how we came up with Giants of Science, but it rhymes. So like all good things that rhyme, it must be true.
And I think we'd just come off, had we done, well, we'd done Frankenstein. We were just coming off Frankenstein.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We were on tour, and it was there was a lot of stuff, wasn't there?
There was.
And I remember saying, it's normally me that says these sort of things. Look, let's just make it as simple as possible. Let's make it, I think it'd been something like with music, and it had been really complicated musically. And I said, look, let's just do it with two guitars and just make it that, you know, that there's no kind of other music. It's just us and two guitars just to strip it back.
And that's what it ended up being. There was a guitar stage right and a guitar stage left and a kind of white board in the middle with some markers, and then a few hats and some props, and that was it.
Yeah.
It was a very, very simple setup, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is different from our usual. I mean, normally we follow the kind of the path of a person, don't we?
Yes.
Kind of, you know, and we did struggle with that to start with when writing it. We were kind of like, well, how do you can't? It's hard, you know, to write a play about an idea. You know, plays are about people, even comedy plays are about mm-hmm. people, you know. So
yeah.
So in the end, we settled on an idea that we would take some of the most important scientists from history and
yeah.
and tell their story in a sort of sketch format almost, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was a way of kind of doing lots of different styles as well, I suppose.
Yes, because each scientist we did, we tried to approach each one's story in a different kind of way, didn't we? I mean, Galileo had a song. Mm. Ada Lovelace was a kind of, you did a kind of direct address thing to the audience, didn't you?
That's
more
right,
more
yeah.
on that later on. So, yeah, each one had a different kind of style, really, which I think ended up being its kind of biggest attraction and also
yeah.
one of the biggest flaws, because it wasn't
yes.
it suffered, didn't it, from not having a kind of narrative arc like the rest
yes.
of our shows have had, one or two protagonists and
that's
this
right.
sort of narrative arc. So this was very much more episodic, wasn't it? So
you didn't get a chance to kind of care about any of the characters in a way,
true.
Did you?
Yeah,
so they ended up being kind of quite two-dimensional. And I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but that was just... It's not necessarily what we do, though, I don't think,
no,
generally.
We're much more about kind of characters having a full arc to play with. And
I tell you what, wait for this. We should do the Noah story then, shouldn't we? Because he had an arc to play with. Just...
Right, get out. I know you're
I
not allowed.
I've got to
it's
do
illegal,
the podcast.
But get out. Well, if you didn't have to do this podcast, you'd be out on your ear for that.
Right, brilliant.
Right, so, yeah, the Noah story. Actually, we should do that.
Yeah, yeah.
A narrative arc. That's what we'll call it. Yeah, so which were the scientists we chose then, and why did we choose them?
Well, we had a good look round, didn't we? And I think we decided that we wanted to kind of cover history, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So start sort of at the beginning of science and come through, not to the present day, perhaps, but certainly into the 20th century.
Yeah.
So we thought, well, where did science, you know, in modern sense start? And that was in ancient Greece. So we started
ancient
with
Greece.
Ancient Greece, didn't we?
Yes. I found this story about a guy called Thales, who was one of the earliest mathematicians and a brilliant mind. And there was a great story about how he predicted it was an eclipse.
Eclipse, that's right, yeah.
And the villagers didn't believe him, because in those days it was all about the gods, and if you tried to predict the weather, you were playing God, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, of course this eclipse happens, and they all think he's magic. And he says, it's very easy what I did. I just followed this and looked at that, and I was able to predict it. And they said, oh, go on then, predict something else. And he said, all right, well, we're going to have a really good harvest of olives this year. And they said, oh, yeah, pull the other one. He said, all right, well, I believe it so much that I want you to sell me all of your...
Olive presses.
Olive presses. That's right. So they all sold him their olive presses. And, of course, he made a killing because the olives were really plentiful. And that's the story. So it's a story about somebody believing so much in science that they'd risk anything for it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which seemed to have a lot of comic potential when I read that story. Now, it turns out it didn't have perhaps as much as I thought it did. We should sort of say it's one of those shows that I remember reading a review, and the review said this: Living Spit shows range from the funny to the downright hilarious. This is one of the funny ones. And I remember thinking, I sort of agree with that. It's just there's something about having to fit so much story into some small little episodes that you can't have quite as much. There's not as much space for gaggery, is there?
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah.
It's still a good show. I mean, certainly, I'm still very proud of it. You know, and Pip Naylor was impressed. So
yeah, loved it, Stu.
Yes.
I need the loo.
You're joking.
You may or may not want to edit this out,
okay,
but I really need to go.
All right, off you go. I'll talk to our audience for a little bit.
I might be 2 minutes.
Okay.
Sorry.
From what he said, I think it might be a number two, but either way, he's gone out of the room now, so we can talk about him. No, I won't talk about him. I will simply say hello to you all. Now, just a reminder, I'm going to get a few cheeky little plugs in here while he's gone. Now, if you like the music from any of our shows, 16 shows, then you can purchase that music not only on compact disc, but also on digital download from our website, which is livingspit.co.uk. You can download that. There's 22 tracks, I believe, and they all are what we think are the best songs from all of our shows. So you can download that, listen to it in the comfort of your own home for the bargain price of just £9.99. That's available now. Also, you could check out our merchandise store where you can buy a Living Spit tote bag or Living Spit pencil or some Living Spit badges. These are all things that are available on our website for various prices. Oh, he's back. I'm just giving a
plug. Are you still talking?
Yeah.
What, did you talk through the whole of that?
I certainly did, yeah. I filled the time.
Brilliant. I'm impressed.
I was ready to go on a bit because I thought it might have been a number two, but it turns out I think that was number one, wasn't it?
I'm not prepared to say.
No.
Right, sorry.
Where were we? We're talking about the scientists that we included and why we chose them. So we touched on Thales.
Yes.
He was one of the earliest ones. Then there's some obvious ones we knew we had to fit in. Some real...
That's right, yeah.
Some actual giants of science. We went with Galileo next.
I loved Galileo. Well, I loved doing that scene.
Galileo was brilliant because you got to play one of the most ridiculous parts you've ever played on the British stage, and that was Pope Urban.
Now, Pope Urban.
We made a fairly weak joke in this about the fact that he's called Pope Urban, so obviously he spoke in a kind of streetwise urban vernacular.
It was like that.
You came on and said like brap brap brap. Hey, what you're talking about, man? In it. And honestly, listeners, it got bigger and bigger every night. And,
it was brilliant.
It was brilliant.
What was brilliant, because I knew it was one of those ones where I knew I could make you laugh. That no matter how much you tried, you never managed to hold it in.
No, I never could, because there's so many little things you'd throw at me. I think you had a joke. I can't remember what the joke was, but anyway, there was a big laugh in it. And you'd wait for the laugh to die down. And you'd silently walk, do this kind of urban walk from one side of the stage to the other in silence, looking at me. And I just collapsed then. And then you'd look at me and you'd play it. You'd go like, what is something funny about this, is it, bro? And I'd be like, no. And it was just, it went on and on, and it was hilarious every night. So that was the comedy highlight for me. It was good fun. Who else did we have? Now, you took Isaac Newton when we did the writing of this show, we split it up, didn't we, into sections?
We did, yeah. Because it lent itself to that in as much as it was like sketches, it was scenes, you know. So and they all had different characters in. It was an obvious one to kind of to split up in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you approached Isaac Newton, which was brilliantly written in iambic pentameter. How did that idea come to you, and what sort of form did it take?
Well, I like writing in verse, and I always wanted to write a show in iambic pentameter. Might not now, having done that.
Yeah, having done that small sketch.
I thought, well, it's roughly the right time. I mean, he was a little bit later than Shakespeare, but not, you know, it's in the same ballpark. So I thought, well, let's do it in iambic pentameter. Mm-hmm. So I did.
And it was, I don't want to spend too much time on this podcast telling our listeners how great we are, but to pause for a second, it was brilliantly written, that scene.
Thank you.
Also think the audience is always right, we should never blame the audience, but having said that, that scene was much funnier than it ever got the laughs for, in my view anyway. I thought there were so many little jokes I thought, that is brilliant. Why aren't they laughing at that? That's a really good joke. Well constructed, clever and witty.
We always get that, though. There's always one joke in the show where we go, that's fun. What's sort of particularly arrogant about us is that we hang on to it. We say, no, we're right and they're wrong.
Yeah, we do, don't we?
That is a funny joke.
Yeah, but we do have a deeper philosophy that you can never blame the audience for jokes not flying. It's always your fault. It's always our fault, not the audience.
Apart from sometimes.
Yeah, apart from sometimes when it is definitely their fault and it's much funnier. Anyway, so that was a great scene. I really enjoyed that. My highlights of that was you as a man who had the plague, who you just appeared over the top of the whiteboard with no top on, going, the plague, the plague, the plague. It was
that
ridiculous.
Was proper Craig moment.
It really was.
Just take your top off, take your T-shirt off.
He's got an obsession with us being naked.
I know. Never mind.
Anyway, so that was Isaac Newton. Then we went to Mary Anning.
Yeah. So we, years ago, when we were, when people were first interested us in us, well, interested in us.
Yes.
we worked up an idea for a radio show, didn't we, for
That's
Radio
right.
4.
Yep.
And it was called Way Out West, and it was it was basically a series about famous people from the West Country in our sort of style. And they wanted us to write sort of, well, an episode, basically. It wasn't quite a whole episode, but a bit of an episode, and then an outline of all the others. And we wrote this episode about Mary Anning, didn't
we? Yeah, yeah.
And it had some really good stuff in it. I mean, of course, you know, as you can imagine, didn't get picked up.
No.
Went nowhere.
Yeah.
But I remember sitting there and thinking, we've got a scene about a... We got some great stuff about a scientist. Let's just steal it and put it in. So
absolutely.
That scene was from that script, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we only changed a few little details, didn't we? We kept it much the same as we'd written for the radio adaptation. But we put in a song. Oh, no, there was already that song, wasn't there? My Only...
No, My Only Daughter, yeah. And then there was a song that you'd written. Well, I thought you'd written the Lyme Regis song.
Oh, that's right,
And then it basically, you hadn't written it.
No, I hadn't.
You'd written the lyrics and then never written the tune. And eventually you got kind of rumbled and you had to go, I think it goes like this. And I could tell you were making it up literally as you went along.
I was. It's one of those things that, like, when I wrote that song on the page of the radio adaptation, I wrote the lyrics and I thought, I kind of know what that is. I know what that song is. I'll flesh it out later on. And then years later, we were doing Giants of Science, and I thought, yeah, I know what that is. So I wrote it into the script. I thought, yeah, we know what that song is. I've got it, what it is. And then you rumbled me, and I went, oh, I actually have to work out what it is now. So, but it didn't take too long.
What are the chords, Stu?
Exactly. Then we had an interval. Now, we had an idea in the interval, which I haven't written in the running list, which was, this was left over from Adolf and Winston, wasn't it?
That's right.
Cup of tea.
In Adolf and Winston, we didn't have an interval, and we spent the whole show talking about the fact that you haven't got time to have an interval.
Mm.
And then we basically, in the very first script, we wrote us making a cup of tea on stage. For no reason. And Craig, I mean, quite rightly, in rehearsals said, well, the trouble is, it doesn't really work, he said, because I'm not doing the impression. Did you notice?
No, I did notice that.
He said,
are we dropping off doing the impression of him?
Well, we can do it occasionally, I think.
Okay. Right.
and he said, you know, the trouble is, it doesn't really make sense because you keep saying that we have to be really quick and then we sit down and have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And we basically couldn't construct a good argument against that.
No.
So we cut it from Adolf Winston. But also, there's a thing about intervals, which is they're great because you stop and you kind of go relax. But also, if it's a shortish show, which our shows are generally shortish, they're not generally over an hour and a quarter, it almost seems kind of crazy to stop in the middle and like everything drops and your energy drops and you have to get the audience going at the top of act two, and that's always a bit of a hard work.
Yeah.
So we sort of prefer doing shows without intervals, but the trouble is that everywhere wants an interval.
Yeah.
Because that's when people sell beer and cups of tea and, you know, Maltesers. Mm. So what we decided was that we would have an interval, but we wouldn't leave the stage, and we would make sure that we got a cup of tea by making a cup of tea on stage.
Yes, but the other thing is, because we were both playing Albert Einstein, we haven't talked about this framing device quite yet, but we'll come back to that. So we were both playing versions of Albert Einstein, and Albert Einstein, having looked into a little bit of his life, as we did when we were researching this show, apparently loved a cup of tea. So he thought, well, what better thing to do than to have him sit with his pipe and his slippers and his cup of tea? Yeah, we had, in fact, when we went to Weymouth, and we had lots of young students in the audience, and they came up on stage in the interval, and they were saying, is that real? Have you got real tea in there? And we said, yeah, there's a real cup of tea in there. Oh, my God, they're making real tea. Char, they're making tea. And then Char came up and went, oh, my God.
Where were they from?
Well, they'd grown up in Bristol, these ones I'm doing
right,
now,
and had
moved to Weymouth. All right? So I think you're fine.
Brilliant. Okay.
Anyway, they were very interested in the fact that we had real tea live on stage. And we were interested in that as well because we got to have a drink of tea, which was very nice.
Which you never get. All in all, it was a brilliant idea, Stuart.
It was. Thank you very much. And we had a lovely cup of tea every night and a little chat, as I recall. Yeah, and then yeah, top of Act Two, we started with Ada Lovelace. Now, this was your bit of writing as well, I remember. So what? How did you approach this and what were your thoughts?
I don't know. I think I wanted to get this idea that, like, quite wrongly, until recently, been kind of written out of history because she was a woman, you know, and she was actually, it was all about Charles Babbage and, you know, and women have been written out of historical history. I mean, there weren't as many women scientists simply because that's not what women did at the time.
Yep.
But the ones, even the ones that were around, didn't get kind of recognized. Well, Mary Anning was another one.
Yep.
At the time, she wasn't recognized. She is now. Obviously, she wasn't allowed to join the Royal Society and things like that. Mm. So I thought, well, you know, and she was a fascinating character, Ada Lovelace, because I was going to say Linda Lovelace. Somebody completely different.
There's a show in that, maybe, but for another time.
But she, you know, she was very young when she died. She was Lord Byron's daughter. Mm. You know, really interesting. And yeah. But I thought, I just didn't want to be too on the nose with the kind of feminist thing. I didn't want to be kind of like fist in the air saying, yeah, isn't it terrible about... So I kind of... I went the other way, basically, and created this scene where it was really patronising to her. I mean, it was satire.
Yeah, it was very clear, I think, that it was satirical in your writing. But we were worried, weren't we, that satire wouldn't read and it would just come across as two straight white men talking women shouldn't be in science. But, it's a fine line, that, isn't it? I remember reading it going... Oh, this is risky what he's going for here. And I remember Craig thinking the same, but we all thought it'll work. I think, you know, if we play it in the right way.
And again, it's that thing of loving, we love it when we make people uncomfortable, when they're laughing, you know.
Yeah.
Like when we talked about it last week with the babies in the nativity. It's really, we enjoy getting people to laugh at things that they think they really didn't ought to.
Yeah.
Or they don't know whether they're supposed to or not.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah. We like that.
And then you wrote Charles Darwin, didn't you?
I did write a Charles Darwin scene. Now, this was tricky for me, the Charles Darwin scene, because I wanted to write it like in a game show parody, a bit like we did with Blind Date in Henry VIII. That was a kind of... Mm-hmm. I wanted a set piece, because we didn't have one of those yet in this show, one of those kind of set pieces, so... The only reason it became win, lose, or draw was because I could fit the word Darwin, lose, or draw in it. As simple as that. Now, win, lose, or draw, I don't know if you've ever... You've seen it. We watched a bit of it, didn't we, as part of the rehearsals?
We did. I watched it when it was on, but it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. It was 30-odd years ago.
We're quite good at writing jokes and scenes which only appeal to a very small demographic, aren't we?
Exactly.
Often you have to be exactly our age in order... to get the jokes.
Well, and sadly, I think I made a slight oversight in the characters I put into my Darwin lose or draw scene. Because, so on win, lose or draw, the game is that there's two members of the public and they're each captained by a celebrity guest. And they were always, obviously because it was recorded in the late 80s, early 90s, the celebrity guests were very of that time. And so I'd written into the scene that the guests were Sonia... and Chris Akabusi. Now, we know who Sonia and Chris Akabusi were, but anyone younger than...
Neither of them were famous for very long, were they?
No, they weren't, no.
So there's a pretty small window where you'd know who they were.
It is. I think perhaps if I was to write that scene now, I might have broadened that out a little to people get the joke a bit more. But it did give Howard the chance to do the most ridiculous impressions of both Sonia and Chris Akabusi. Can you give us a little blast of some of them now, Howard?
Sonia, sophisticated.
That's my Sonia impression.
Brilliant.
But the great thing about Chris Akabusi is that he had a catchphrase, Stuart.
Ahooga!
And Stu and I had this weird, like, not argument, we had I said, look, I'm a bit worried about this, Stu, because I don't think that was Chris Akabusi's catchphrase.
Yep.
I think that was John Fashanu's catchphrase.
And I said, no, it's definitely Chris Akabusi.
I said, no, I'm pretty sure. I remember him on Gladiators, John Fashanu, and he always said ahooga. And then we looked it up, didn't we?
We did.
And it turns out that it was Chris Akabusi's catchphrase, and John Fashanu stole it.
Yeah, well, allegedly.
Allegedly.
There was a court case where I believe Chris Akabusi sued John Fashanu over the use of awooga, which he had copyrighted as his catchphrase, and Fash went, I think you'll find I came up with it first.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Either way, I remember... Well, I remember both of them saying it, but Chris Akabusi was the most famous for saying it, so it went in. And in fact, that was Chris Akabusi's only line, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
The only way he responded to anything was, Aluga!
And I got, in that scene, I got a bit of the Stew treatment, didn't I? Which was playing multiple characters at the same time.
Yes, and how was that for you?
I hated it, of course. It's really annoying.
It's really hard work.
And because I was playing four characters at one time, two of which had my face.
That's right.
But just, like, one was happy and one was sad, I think.
Yes.
And then the other two of which had lollipop-style masks of Sonia and Chris Akabusi.
That's right.
And so I had to not only remember whose line I'm saying, I had to remember to put the right one up. And it didn't always happen.
It didn't, you know, with comedic results.
Yes.
Or not. And then... Also, it was tricky, that scene, because the whole point of the game show format was to get out some of Darwin's theories on evolution, the theory of evolution. And there's a lot of misconceptions about evolution. And people who don't understand it are very ready to lambast it and say, well, the famous one is, if we're evolved from monkeys, how come there are still monkeys? Ah, got you. And actually, they just misunderstood what evolution means, and I really wanted to address that. So I made one of the characters say that exact line, and then Darwin goes on to explain it, which is fine and all well and good, but at the end of the day, you're just explaining a scientific idea through the mouthpiece of a character on stage.
But I think that was the nature of this show. I mean,
I felt
like that with Ada Lovelace, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's how to make that material interesting and funny, you know.
Yeah, we started out saying we want this to be about their lives and the people, not necessarily the scientific ideas, but then those ideas are so fundamental to some of their characters that it's difficult, especially when you think they're brilliant, that it's quite difficult to not touch on them at all. So we ended up doing that a bit with Darwin, which is probably the moments when you start to lose some people in the audience, maybe, perhaps. Who knows?
Yeah.
But either way, they're not the moments that kind of sing out as much as the comedy.
But you did come up with this brilliant idea, Stu, which I
what was that?
Which was this, the framing device. We can talk about it.
We'll
talk about
this the now. Einsteins.
Because we just didn't know how we were going to do this, did we? We didn't know how we were going to kind of open it and how we're going to... Why are we there telling this story?
Yeah.
Who are we? And, you know, that's always the first question, is like, who are we? I mean, sometimes we're ourselves.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're other characters. In Nativity, obviously, we're God and... What's his name?
Gabriel.
Gabriel, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we're versions of ourselves. But you came up with this brilliant idea of... that it's Albert Einstein giving a lecture about the giants of science.
That's right, yeah. Well, our first thought was, if we come on as Howard and Stew, as we normally would, and say, hi, we're here to tell you about science, it sort of doesn't ring true. Like, why? What do we know about science? I mean, I appreciate that very much that Dr. Philip Naylor says he was impressed with the show, and as an ex-physicist, that's very flattering, but...
He obviously hadn't read Wikipedia, because that's where we get all our stuff from.
Exactly. If only he'd read that before going off to train as a physicist, eh? He could have saved himself years of studying. So we don't actually know that much about science, do we?
No, nothing. I mean, basically nothing.
Nothing. So it was quite a tricky subject to approach. I mean... But it's amazing what you can get through with a few stupid jokes and wigs. Mm. Anyway, so we want to come on as Howard and Stew and say we're going to do a show about science, but we know nothing about science, and we very openly admit that. So it was trying to find a different device. And I came up with this thing that you come on as Albert Einstein in the wig and the jumper and the pipe and the slippers, all that sort of thing. And you say, hi, everyone, I'm Albert Einstein. And there's no attempt, it's very important that there's no attempt to try and do a German accent or try and be like Einstein in any other way. I mean, it's very clear that you were Howard in a wig with a jumper on.
And we even had moustaches that were on sticks that we didn't have to have moustaches on through the whole show.
So just as you were starting your quote-unquote lecture in science... I came on identically dressed as another Einstein, and I just ignored you and said exactly what you had said until we noticed each other and asked how we could both be existent at the same time. And then the answer was the theory of relativity. So it actually played it quite well into the Einsteinian ideas and theories. Thank God, because I couldn't think of anything else.
So we tackled Einstein as the last... The last subject
that's
of,
right.
of the show, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, because we were Einstein all the way through. So between all these scenes, we got together and had a little chat, didn't we, or a little song about that person. So it became this framework for the whole thing, which we revisited towards the end, right at the very end.
So we realised we wanted to do Einstein's story, didn't we? And we'd never done anything similar to The War in 15 Minutes, had we?
No, not since then.
So, well, you came up with the idea of doing it as a kind of similar sort of thing, basically the story of his life in a song, which was not that long, was it? It was about 7 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it wasn't a huge song, but it's longer than a normal song would be, but it was... taking in his kind of early life and his training to be a... Because he had a very menial job working in the patent office. And according to the history books, that is where he came up with his brilliant theories while his mind was unoccupied with this menial work. He would dream up all these theories and he wrote them down in papers and would send them off to scientific journals for inclusion. So that was a really nice bit of story. That we wanted to put in, so we made that into a bit of song. And then there was his affairs, not his affair. He went off to stay with his cousin when he got a job in Berlin as a physicist, and fell in love with her, and they wanted to get married. And there's this lovely little detail that he said to his wife, "I want to divorce you and marry my cousin." She said, "Okay, well, I hope you're going to support our two little boys." And he said, "Yes, I am. When I win the Nobel Prize, I'll give you the prize money." And she said, "Well, what if you don't?" And he supposedly said, "I will, and I'll give you the money." And he was so sure that he did that she agreed. And turns out he did win the Nobel Prize and he did give her the money.
Yeah, but it was like, wasn't it like 15 years later or something?
Yeah, it was 15 years later.
I mean, that's not a great deal,
no,
is it?
No, you know, you'd think she would add some interest to that in the intervening years. But, but no, she kept it the same debt. So he paid her off with his Nobel Prize money and ran off to live with his cousin, and apparently everything was hunky-dory. So it's just a fascinating story, a very eccentric, brilliant genius of a man. We don't know much about Einstein, do we? We know of obviously E equals MC squared, which was part of the song as well. We made that into a bit of song. And and then the ending.
Well, the
course,
ending of the show, which was very interesting, which I don't think anybody saw coming.
Really?
Do you want to talk us through it, Stu?
Well, the ending was that as soon as we had told the story of Albert Einstein's life, the spirit of Einstein left us and we turned back into Howard and Stu, and it was as if we had exorcised his spirit. Like he had a restless spirit, needed his story to be told, and we were the conduits for that message to come through. So that was the kind of plan, really. So we just took our wigs off and became us again, to much comedic effect, Howard.
Well, to some comedic effect.
To some.
So you, there's a brilliant song in the middle of the Albert Einstein song. I can say that because you wrote it.
Oh, thanks.
And that's E equals MC squared. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about... What do you want? Should we hear it?
Let's hear it first, shall we? And then we'll fill you in with a few bits of detail about how the song came to be. So let's hear the song, E equals MC squared.
E equals MC squared. I bet that you never thought that there'd be a theory as famous as E equals MC squared. It's too complicated to explain it to all of you. And if we did, then you probably still wouldn't have a clue. E stands for energy and N stands for mass.
Okay, so that's the song that the Einsteins sing, E equals MC squared.
And so what were the influences for that,
well,
Stu?
Well, I know that, Howard, you're a huge fan of They Might Be Giants, aren't you? You're a lifelong fan, in fact. You've been a fan of them since 1990, their first album, I believe.
Well, not their first album, but their big breakthrough album. Third album.
Well, is it really? The third album, yeah. Flood? Wow.
Yeah, Flood.
Well, I know you're a huge, huge fan, and... I was less of a fan until I really listened to some. I think you played me a bit in the car going somewhere. Yeah. Over the years, we've basically played little bits of TMBG, as we call them. Yeah. You played a bit to me in the car. And I've slowly, it's taken a little while, because they're quite idiosyncratic, aren't they, in terms of their songwriting.
Definitely, yeah.
But it's taken a while, but I really came to love them as a band. There's an album they've got, isn't there, called Here Comes Science.
Yes, that's right.
And that was a massive influence on that song, because is it a kids' album, or it's an album at least for...
Well, they've written 4 children's albums, I think, maybe even 5. And what's brilliant about them is that they are aimed at children, and they deal with their various... one which was Here Come the 1-2-3s, Here Come the ABCs, there's an album called No, and they're all aimed at... they're all aimed at children, but the quality of the music is exactly the same as any other album. They don't patronise the kids by, you know, making it simpler. The music's still fantastic.
Yes.
And that's what I love about them. And they did an album called Here Comes Science, which has got lots of songs about science.
Yeah, so that's where that song came from, really. It was trying to get a bit of that style.
Yeah, and it's not, I would say it's not a style that you normally write. It's more the sort of thing that I would normally write.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Well, also because we had these 2 guitars, and we knew from the beginning that it was going to be a guitar show. It's going to be a 2 of us playing guitars show. So it gave me that kind of impetus to write that kind of style, because I knew we could just sort of chug on the guitar. So we knew we had the instrumentation there for that sort of writing as well. So, I just sort of, that's what came out.
That's right. Yeah. And tell me, Stu, if I wanted to listen to that track again and didn't want to just keep listening to all the way through this podcast, how might I be able to do that?
Well, you're in luck, Howard. You are able to do that by downloading it from our website. It is part of the Living Spits Greatest Spits compilation. Yeah, and eagle-eared listeners would have heard while you went off to the toilet that I was extolling the virtues of our album.
Oh, were you?
Right, a little bit. But it's nice to touch on it again. You can download that album from our website, livingspit.co.uk. And how much is it, Howard? Because I haven't got much money at the moment.
It's just $9.99. Which,
you're joking.
It's 23 tracks, I think.
There's 23.
So there's there's a hidden track.
There is.
Unintentionally hidden. We forgot to put
it on. We just forgot to put it on the back of the CD.
So that's like, that's not even 50p a song, Stu.
We should have called it Now That's What I Call Value for Money.
Well, we couldn't, because the Sony have already got the rights for the...
We did check that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, bastards. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, right, well, that's sort of it, isn't it?
Do you know what? Talking about this has made me think about it again, and I like it. There, I said it.
Do you? Great.
It was a nice little gig, wasn't it? It was lots of fun.
Great.
So, let's move on to some... Questions from the audience.
And now for some audience questions.
Okay, we're trying to time it really well with each other, but there is a slight delay on this call, so we probably went questions from...
We definitely did.
Yeah.
But I quite like it, though.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. This is somebody I know, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's Simon Ward. He says, how do I reset the maintenance light on a 2002 RAV4? Well, Simon, what I would do is, if you look under the under your steering wheel, you should find just underneath there, there's a little socket. And if you pull the front of the socket, there's a little kind of chocolate block socket thing. What you need is one of the diagnostic tools that you can get from somebody like a Toolmaster or something like that. They're about 50 quid. And just pop that in there and run through the diagnostics, and that should do it.
There you go, Simon. So there's your answer. And if any other listeners want any mechanical car related questions asked to Howard, then maybe we should make this a feature, you know?
Maybe.
Howard's
maybe
car
not.
Questions. So send them in. And do you know what? I saw that question on the list. I thought that's going to stump us. But no, Howard's come up trumps with a great response to that. So there you go, Simon. I hope you managed to get that maintenance light working. Yeah, we'll move on. Von Trapp, a brilliant name, Von Trapp, has said, if Henry VIII was alive today, what would be his tips for coping with lockdown?
I think he'd he'd be very Donald Trump about it.
Do you think so?
Yeah, he would like. He wouldn't hold with it, would he?
No.
He'd be like, I don't think he'd care that anybody was dying.
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know, it's not a funny answer. It's just what I think.
He'd say pish, and he'd walk
he'd
out
say
into
pish
the
and posh,
pish
yeah.
and posh,
and then he'd eat a large chicken leg,
yeah.
throw it behind him,
yeah.
and then go and roger one of his wives or mistresses. There,
there
you
we go. That's how he'd cope with it. Well, to be honest, Howard, it sounds quite appealing. I
tell you what, I don't think I've used the word rogered for a long, long time. That's a proper, like, 70s...
I don't think anyone's used the word rogered in that context for a little while. And it's nice to see it make a comeback, Howard. So thank yeah. you for that.
There you go.
And then Von Trapp is back yeah. again with another question.
Right. Two questions, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I know. Now, Von Trapp asks, how are you planning to exercise each day during the lockdown?
Well, I do 2.5 hours of yoga every morning.
Is that right?
That's how I stay in the shape that I am.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, I'm not planning to do any exercise.
You're going for your daily walk?
I go for my daily walk with
yeah.
the dog.
Yeah. yeah.
Although I didn't today.
Oh.
Because I was doing this. You're a keen runner. Or
I am. And you know what? Today, for the first time in 4 months,
yeah.
I went for a run.
Oh, nice.
I don't know why I left it so long. And I don't know why today I decided to do it. But I just thought, do you know what? I need to get out of the house today and I need to go and have a run and just blow off some steam. So I did.
Were you wearing that vest?
Which vest?
I came round to your house the other day to drop something off and I knocked on the door and then obviously went back down the path.
Yeah.
And you were wearing a vest, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I was wearing that vest, but I wasn't wearing the vest today, no.
How does your wife feel about the vest?
I mean, she likes my guns, Howard.
Right,
so
okay.
She looked at my guns and she said, oh... You look hot, and I said thanks.
She didn't say that, did she?
No. No.
Can I just check?
She said, I'd actually tell you what she actually did say. She said, I came down the stairs with a vest, and she looked at me. She gave me a disdainful glance, and she said, you look like a redneck.
Right.
And I said, I'm wearing it.
Were you channeling Joe Exotic?
I certainly was. Yeah, I had a mullet and a cap, and I'd grown a sort of handlebar moustache down with it, yeah.
Yeah, are you intending to wear that? Like out that vest.
I have worn it out.
Right,
I put a shirt on over it, like an open shirt on over it.
Right, that's okay. Yeah.
That's okay, isn't it? And I have worn it out on exceptionally hot days.
Not that you need to take any lessons in fashion from me.
I still wouldn't wear it out if I could help it.
Fair enough.
Which leads us straight on to Leslie Casey.
Yeah. Which is any chance you could do a Joe Wicks type workout? I would so join in. I think it's safe to say, let Joe do what he's good at and let us do what we're good at.
Yeah.
Leslie.
Yeah.
If you want to yeah. exercise, watch Joe Wicks. If you want a laugh a minute podcast experience,
yeah.
then listen to this. Yeah,
I think it's us who are laughing every minute, and perhaps none of the audience are. But either way, yes, Leslie, there's your answer. You won't be seeing us doing any Joe Wicks type workouts anytime soon. Steve Barrett, which is our brother-in-law's father, he yeah. says, what's a podcast?
Brilliant.
Yeah. Classic Steve, that, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
David Phillips says, another enjoyable listen. Thought the silence was a masterstroke.
Oh, don't remind me, David. Don't remind me.
Would love to hear the thought process behind Elizabeth, and does Stu enjoy playing women as much as he seems to? I have played dames and was shocked at how much I look like my mother.
Well, hello again, David. It's lovely to hear from you again.
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, I think we will do an episode on Elizabeth.
Yeah, probably we'll do Elizabeth.
I think we've been holding off on Elizabeth because we were supposed to be doing it now, weren't we? And we've rewritten it for the occasion, and we're much more proud now of that script than we've ever been.
Yeah.
So I know we're planning on doing it next summer, next spring and summer, but it still feels painful to think about that because we would be doing it right now. We'd be opening it next week. So
We were supposed to be in rehearsals today.
Yes,
we were.
So very, very sad. But yes, I do enjoy playing women a lot. I don't really know why. When I was 10, I entered a fancy dress competition at my school.
You're not going to do the jumper story, are you?
Not the jumper story, no.
No. Right. Good.
It's for another occasion, perhaps. This one involves a fancy dress competition when I was at school. And I don't believe there was a theme. I mean, it was Christmas, and it was go in fancy dress as whatever you like. And I went as a woman. And I wore one of my mum's dresses and one of her... a fascinator that she had in the cupboard kicking about. And I put high heels on and lipstick, and I won first prize. And I think somewhere in my brain, the connection has been made between dressing as a woman and winning.
Right.
So I think I enjoy it because it's kind of like, I'm going to use that this much abhorred phrase now. As an actor, as an actor, you're always looking to be something as far away from you as possible. That I am anyway. And so that for me is like, you don't have to do any work because you're already just coming on and saying, well, I'm a woman, which is the exact opposite of what I am. So it's just a kind of shortcut to brilliant acting. And it is brilliant, isn't it, my acting, Howard?
Right, let's move on now. I tell you what, well, there's something that's not on the thing because it didn't come in. Can we just talk about Alex Rawlings?
Of course.
And these emails.
So do you know who she is?
No idea.
Me neither.
Alex, if you're listening to this, brilliant, but we're not sure why they've been sent to us.
Yeah, we should just tell the audience what has happened. So Alex Rawlings, we don't know who she is, and she sent us about 12 emails today, each with her recreating a costume from a film or show. She's got like the Scarecrow in there. She's got Catherine Hepburn. She's got the lot.
Carmen Miranda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's just doing a pose similar to it with what she's found in her wardrobe. And the message, what's the message say?
It says, in case you're bored, here's me on lockdown cobbling costumes together. Enjoy, or it's together to venjoy, it says, but I think it means, now I don't know whether she sent it to literally everybody in her address book or whether she's just sent it to us. I mean, they're great, they're really, really great, Alex. Thanks,
they're
very
brilliant
much.
Alex, but let's not have any more, eh? But we do massively appreciate it, and we really are glad that you're coping with lockdown in an enjoyable and amusing and entertaining way. Okay, so that's it?
I think it is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we're at the point of the podcast, which is my favourite feature.
Hang on. Whoa.
Hang on, you mean to tell me you haven't thought about this? Every week you go, next week I'll think about it.
No, I did think about it last week, and I think I surpassed myself.
You certainly did with your Easter. You had an Easter themed.
I did, yeah.
Howard's End, didn't you? Well, let's crack into it.
Okay.
Listeners, the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time for Howard's End.
Howard's End is gonna end the show for us. Howard's End.
Okay, there's the jingle. Howard, over to you.
Well, whether you believe in evolution or creationism, in religion or science, just remember, be kind.
Oh, it's so stirring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it speaks to everyone, irrespective of their beliefs, and that's what I love about Howard's End. It's something for everybody, isn't it? Literally.
Brilliant, right.
So there we go. More profound words from Howard at the end of this podcast. Wonderful stuff.
So that's it. We are going to be back next week. Yep. We haven't talked about it, but I'm assuming we're going to do another one next week.
Well, I'm not doing anything. Are you?
No, nothing at all. So if you've got any special requests in terms of which show you would like us to cover, then let us know. We make the decision which show we're going to do on a Friday. So, write in the various places, either underneath this podcast or on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram or on our website. Just send that message in and we might be able to accommodate it.
Yes, and we're also thinking about future ideas for this podcast, because obviously we've got 16 shows, so we've got a potential 16 episodes there. Now, we don't know where to take it after that, if at all.
Yeah.
So let us know your thoughts, whether we should just shut up or what you'd like us to talk about. We're trying to think of a few things, but so far we haven't come up with anything that excites us. So let us know on that as well.
Great.
That's it.
So, thanks very much for listening again. And we'll see you again, or you'll hear us again next week.
You will. See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Living Spit Podcast. Welcome to the Living Spit Podcast. Listen to the Living Spit Podcast. It's on the way.